things happen to people who listen to radio.
Once we understand the bug, we will defeat it.
Are you ready for
radio? The only good bug is a dead bug.
Shoot a nuke down a bug hole, you got a lot of dead bugs. All right?
Some say that a live and let live policy is preferable to war with the bugs.
I say kill them all. Yeah.
Put it on and leave it on.
Welcome to Bug Radio, boys and girls. Big old show this week. We're going to be asking UK rap heavyweight Jam Baxter what it's like to get locked down in Mexico. Has the bug got us sleepwalking into the Matrix? And do we now need a plastic glory hole to shake hands? Stick around and find out. We're going out on Threads Radio, that's threadsradio.com, and you can follow us on @BugRadio2020 on Twitter and Instagram. Give us a click. To read the Bug Riot Act, as always, I'm joined by the scourge of Southeast London, Mr. Kieran Monks Kaufman. Fill your boots.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a slightly different phase we're in now, and of course we even had a Bug Radio social on the Thames the other night, you know, which felt quite illicit. And I should stress, the Bug Radio social was just you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that wasn't especially egregious, but nonetheless, you know, a pretty rare event.
I mean, basically, at the beginning, the bug was new, you know, like it was extraordinary, you know, in peacetime to be subjected to these kinds of measures. And so, you know, I think we all found it fascinating and exciting, you know, as a piece of history that we were living through in real time, you know, like how would it change the world and so on. Now, I'm fed up with it. I've started reading a book called Six Records of a Floating Life, which was written in China at the beginning of the 19th century. For no reason other than that it's about as far away from Boris Johnson and herd immunity and social fucking distancing as it's possible to go.
I suppose the problem now is that everybody's got their own conception of what is the right approach, because there's so much ambiguity at play. Yeah. So something that seems obviously fine to one person is a scandal to someone else.
Yeah.
Or also, if you're doing something, it might seem perfectly reasonable. But if someone else is doing it, you know, it might seem like an absolute sort of oblivion, throw away the key type situation.
Me personally, I think the way we're going, I know we're drinking beer, so it looks like we're saying what's good for us is not good for everyone else. But if we carry on the way we're going, I think we're going to have a major lockdown in 2 weeks, the way the restrictions are. And in 2 weeks, I think we're going to see a massive rise in the deaths again.
I
think we should be more stricter like Spain, and none of us be allowed out.
I mean, it's clear that we're in this different era now, and people are granting themselves greater or less latitude to take advantage of it. This is going to sort of test people's bonds, because, you know, we all have to sort of trust each other, but also no one trusts each other. Radio. As the sort of evolution of the plague phase continues, we're getting something that we haven't really had in Britain, but has been quite common around the world. Intrusive apps that you're supposed to carry for the purposes of what they call contact tracing.
Really all it is a bugging system. That way, you know, you leave your smartphone or the power's off. This is always plugged in every part of the house, listening to everything you do.
So there's this mysterious trial going on in the Isle of Wight. Why did they pick the Isle of Wight?
I don't know. I guess it's kind of a contained environment, isn't it? Presumably, if you live on the Isle of Wight, you haven't been able to leave the Isle of Wight for the last 2 months.
Right, so this would feel like something to do.
It's a bit like the studio in The Truman Show.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, so this is a murky experiment going on the people of the Isle of Wight. And as we understand it, it's got a key for everybody that's using it. And so whenever they come into contact with someone else with the app, it sort of feeds information into each other's phones. And then if someone's got the bug, it sort of warns everyone else to stay the fuck away from them and to quarantine ASAP. We should say that it would at least be contingent on the device working, where apparently in the Isle of Wight, it's not.
Yeah, and it won't be until June at the earliest.
Yeah, so they're saying that this rinses your battery worse than that sort of live location thing where you're trying to get somewhere because you don't trust your own sense of direction, and then all of a sudden your blower's dead and you're completely lost.
Yeah.
And also it doesn't work on certain shit phones. So if you've got a shit phone, you basically, you know, you're at the mercy of the bug.
Do they maybe just give you a sick phone?
Well, they could do. I mean, that's not been in Rishi Sunak's stimulus packages so far, but maybe the people should demand, well, or shouldn't, as we'll come on to. Civil rights and sort of privacy campaigners have been up in arms about this because they're like, you know, exactly what data is it taking, and you know, what is it revealing about your lifestyle? And that's the issue with the places where it has worked and where it has been seen. I mean, so this is now pretty common around the world. The MIT House Journal has done a sterling service of compiling what it believes are most of the ones that have been released, and they're all over the gaff. So Bahrain and Bulgaria and Finland and Ghana, everybody's up to it. And they've all got their own standards of transparency and what exactly they take. So, for instance, in some places, it just takes, like, you know, minimal data, and then it can destroy itself, and you can apparently get rid of all trace of it in seconds. Whereas in other places, like, for instance, China, it will pour over your banking records and reveal everything about you, and, you know, sort of lay you bare like you're on a table being dissected.
According to the MIT Tech Review, despite the avalanche of services, we know very little about them or how they could affect society. That's what it says. I mean, is this not the case with more or less every new technology? Like, every time the boffins develop a solution to a problem, it will have side effects, which are then addressed by different boffins, and then there's like an arms race between the various factions of boffins. Is this sort of exclusive to bug tracing apps?
Well, I mean, it seems like this is seen as an opportunity. So the American Civil Liberties Union is saying that they're sort of hard-won victories over the more surveillance lobby, like the people who thought Edward Snowden was just whining pointlessly. And, you know, the people who are like, if you've got nothing to hide, let me film your bathroom.
Yeah. In one case in Israel, officers flew a drone up to the window of an 18th floor flat to check on a coronavirus patient's quarantine. She waved at the aircraft filming her. I mean, surely that's illegal, no?
Yeah, that is a liberty. They got done for that in France, didn't they? The gendarmes were flying these fleet of surveillance drones all over the place and then using them to moralise at people from a great height. And now they've been ruled illegal by the French courts. So
good.
Yeah, so that's a blow. But that seems like, you know, both encouraging that it was checked in this case, but also an indication that this is mission creep. The ACLU in America are very concerned that the people who produce these products are, you know, being able to make their case at an advantageous moment to the authorities, saying, you know, and sort of pulling on their arms, and they don't need a lot of arm twisting to say, you know, don't you just want to know more about your citizens' whereabouts and beliefs and lifestyles and everything like that? So it obviously, you know, is an opportunity. Another interesting point brought up by the writer and, I suppose, philosopher Richard Seymour, talks about how biosecurity is being treated like counterterrorism, and that you use secret services to sort of track and isolate people rather than kill them, although I suppose you could do as well, but sort of using those sort of techniques. So you're sort of weaponizing the treatment against the bug, but also against the carriers, you know, like your delightful Aunt Hortense.
Yeah, I mean, unilateral assassinations aside, isn't a degree of this sort of thing kind of necessary? I mean, because, like, while the Chinese monitoring and the Singapore monitoring feels dystopian, isn't the problem in the UK that the government has just been much too lax and just fucked it off, basically? You know, and thousands of people have died unnecessarily as a result. That's a bit of a political obstacle for the sort of anti-surveillance campaigners, isn't it?
Well, yeah, so I suppose there's been all sorts of emergency measures. Some of them, Rishi Sunak sort of hurling lumps of gold at everyone, welcome. Surveillance drones, less welcome. But clearly emergency powers are justified in some cases. But it's so easy to see how it can get abused, and also it's harder to see what the justification for instance in Korea, when they talk about, you know, pervert emerges from strip club with virus. I mean, in certain places it's clear that there are no boundaries around what is revealed. Another alarming aspect is how it requires the social conditioning, as in it relies on all of us to take part in that surveillance, which we've talked about a lot on Bug Radio. I just want to read this little extract from what I found to be a very interesting article in the New York Times called "The Coronavirus Surge Brought Out Singapore's Dark Side." So the author says, "Through the government's flyers and text messages and speeches, I've been extorted, scolded, cheered up, menaced, coddled, invited to conspire against my fellow residents, and reminded all the while that it's for my own good. Report safe distancing infringements on the app," said a WhatsApp message I got from a Singaporean government. "Provide specific details, location, and photos." A notice tacked to our bulletin board, titled simply "Penalty," detailed the prison terms, fines, and court prosecutions we could get for breaking the rules. So, I mean, it's clear that we're being conscripted into this surveillance effort, and it's a surveillance culture that's being created.
Now, more than ever, we need...
radio. Commence blathering.
There's been a whole hoo-ha about how bad the messaging's been.
We think it's important to stay sane.
Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, direct from...
Southeast London.
Radio.
Baby, let's go!
When the fuck is this going to end?
Just trying to find something properly weird.
We need to find whatever it takes to get through this rotten fucking plague.
Well, this is all very well, but what if all your gigs get cancelled and you're holed up in the Mexican mountains with no booze and no microphone? We'll find out.
Go. Yeah, we're in business. Hi. It's happening. Bug Radio.
You're right.
In Mexico.
Yes, Bug Radio. Really in business.
I wanted to just ask first off, you know, where are you and tell us a bit about it.
I'm in San Cristobal de las Casas in Chiapas. It's a little mountain town, very picturesque. It's a colourful little spot. I've got a nice little yard. I've got a nice little setup. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sorted. I'm all right.
What's it like getting locked down in Mexico?
It's not really a lockdown, to be honest. It's not. Basically, if you go central, if you go to the centre of this town, there are bare policemen with just unnecessarily sized weapons. And they've got these little straps of what I assume to be like stun grenades, possibly flash grenades, who knows, around them. But they don't really seem to be doing much because there's still bare people around just sitting around, catching jokes, doing whatever.
So what, the Mexicans aren't fussed? They're just sort of going about their business?
I can only speak for this town at the moment because it only just started getting a little bit hysterical globally when I first got here. But, I mean, a lot of stuff is closed, bare feds in central, but then if you go outside, it seems to be business as usual. There's just bare, like, colourful markets, people, you know, rubbing all up against each other, buying fruit, transactions all over the place.
So how did you come to be in this situation? So you went to Mexico for a writing retreat, is that correct? And then, you know, when the music stopped, you were in Chiapas. So, you know, you weren't really supposed to be in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I came out here at the beginning of February in good faith, and then I was in the beaches in Oaxaca. I was down south in Puerto Escondido and Puerto Angel and Zipoliti. Very famous nudist beach, Zipoliti. There's lots of very old, very naked men there, but turned out they were then prohibited from going on the beach. They shut the whole beach down, and that was when I was like, oh, something's happening. And then I went to Chiapas, and then when I got here, everything started closing. I've been here about 2 months.
And so had you, like, booked your lodgings aware that you would be kind of, like, marooned or imprisoned or quarantined? So were you, like, looking for, like, a bug palace, you know, the best place to sort of hunker down while the bug does its worst?
Yeah, no, I was, man. It was because you, Kieran, you told me about your friend's friend in Peru who found himself in a hostel room with no windows, unable to leave. And that sounded like such a nightmare scenario to me that I vowed to make sure that I had a crisp dwelling of some sort. That was your warning that led me to this palatial situation right now. So I thank you for that.
So if it wasn't for him, we could be talking to you now in a 4x4 foot cell.
Exactly.
Yeah, in some sort of roach infested jailhouse. Tell us about your place. Like, is it charming as all hell?
Can you see this delightful tiling behind me? This delightful tiling.
And it looks nice.
Yeah, the tiling is very tasteful.
Rustic hanging baskets full of vegetables here.
Oh, man.
Yeah, look at that. No, yeah, it's all right, man. It's nice. It's a nice spot.
So what, have you got like a swimming pool or, you know, how many rooms is
it? No, it's not that. I've just got my bedroom up there and I've just got this little kind of kitchen living room area here. I've got a little patio, got a nice little view of the mountains. I'm doing all right.
So what's been happening in England is that when city people go somewhere where they're not from, like, say, the Lake District, all the locals get mad as fuck. They're like, you know, what are these people coming in bringing the bug? I mean, so have the people of Chiapas accepted you, or are you seen as, like, a vector of disease?
I was set upon by an old lady about 2 days ago in a vegetable shop. I was innocently trying to buy red peppers. And apparently I got too close to this lady. It's the only little shred of bug hysteria that I've had. I just, you know, approached her with a small handful of vegetables and I just got a torrent of abuse in Spanish. And my Spanish is all right, but it's definitely not up to kind of like impromptu arguments on the street.
You need properly planned arguments.
But you generally feel like you've been sort of accepted, like you're, like, have you met any interesting characters?
I mean, my interaction...
Have you met any boring characters?
I've met a very dull Finnish guy. He really likes playing the harmonica and he was living in the house adjacent to me for a while. I really resented his presence for a number of reasons because I'm really getting quite into this isolation thing. I'm really settling into a nice little routine that involves my own company, no harmonicas and no... Well,
people are dickheads, aren't they, basically?
As a general rule of thumb, I found that to be true. He wouldn't shake my hand, actually, the Finnish man. He wouldn't shake my hand. He wouldn't even do an elbow bump, but he would play loud harmonica on his balcony.
If he's got the bug, then maybe the harmonica is kind of all right, no? I mean, if it's between the harmonica and the bug.
It's true. No one wants it. I mean, I had a bug scare. I ate some cheese. It was actually delicious cheese. It had that chunk of pesto in it, but it made me very, very ill. And then this was at the beginning of bug, like mega hysteria. And I did some Googling and I found out that the bug can actually manifest itself in your guts, in your innards first, before it draws for the lungs. And I got really paranoid about it for a couple of days. I just had severe food poisoning, but that was enough to terrify me. I mean, I guess the Finnish guy is onto something, but I still don't back him in any way.
Well, let's hope he's not listening to this.
Well, we hope everyone listens to Bug Radio. It's very important. And they banned booze, is that?
Oh no, yeah, They have banned booze.
Hang on, so they banned booze, like statewide?
Pretty much countrywide.
You can't buy booze if you go into a shop?
No. I've even tried to like sneak a few kind of those weird like neon alco pops onto the thing in the shops and I've been denied. But that was at the beginning. Now I've come across a woman that she delivers. She's a red wine shop and she delivers. So I get a few bottles every couple of weeks or something. But in general, you cannot buy booze. It seems like a kind of quite a strange response. But I was speaking to someone who said that it might be a measure against domestic violence, which Mexico has a huge problem with.
Yeah.
And also it does stop people going out to have a razz, doesn't it?
So who's your kind of wine dealer? Is it like just a sort of like mum and pop store, like a little sort of homespun operation off the books?
I don't want to put her out there like that, but she owns a restaurant. And so obviously she's got a big cavernous cellar of wine and she's looking to distribute it to people that need, like as a public service. She's very much a superhero to us. Miles alcoholics.
Yeah, she sounds like a, you know, terrific. But you were saying the other day that Mother's Day is very big in Mexico, and so people were going to get fucked up one way or the other. And so they were turning to, like, bathtub homebrew sort of crap, and, you know, that's dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, they're quite big on moonshine here. In kind of small towns, you can get some really quite delicious-tasting mezcal from this giant plastic tub for incredibly small amounts of money. But then, yeah, apparently Mother's Day is a big news up here. I mean, from what I gather, quite a lot of people died from bootleg booze because they couldn't buy good booze. So it's backfired there. It's backfired on the government. I mean, maybe, you know, possibly there were more markings from the booze than there would have been potential bug markings.
Shit. How long had I been watching these? How long had I been staring at billboards feeding my coins into slot machines? I never clocked it was possible to puke for 20 months straight.
I guess you went there to work on a new album, is that right? I mean, how is, like, trying to produce material at a time like this? And do you try and, you know, work the circumstances into your material?
Is this the bug album?
Well, I've always been into bug bars. I've always been into bars about bugs heavily, but... No, I mean, I haven't... No, you can't slip any overt about Corona because it's just so, so cringe, isn't it? I hate topical rap music at the best of times. I remember I've had this discussion with you, Kieran, about whether it's someone's duty to write about current events in rap songs, and I think that it's just real cringe and real terrible anytime that it's done.
Are any particular rappers guilty of this?
You're not going to get me to say that on Bug Radio. I know what you're trying to do here. You want your world star moment, but it's not happening.
I mean, I know what you're saying, that, you know, nobody wants to talk about, you know, Blair is a war criminal, blah, 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 but this is the Bug.
I mean, what are you going to do with your rap tune about Corona when this is all blown over? You've spent a while, you've gone to the trouble of recording your Corona rap tune, and then who's going to listen to that once it's all over? Like, oh, let's listen to that tune that reminds me of when I couldn't go out for months and the entire world went crazy. It's very short-sighted. You're not writing anything with any longevity there. You're just writing a little 16 about coronavirus. I'm not backing it at all.
But aren't you underestimating the Bug? And also, is it not possible to sort of work with it thematically, like let it in a bit, but not let it in all the way?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if this ends up drawing itself out for decades, and it's just the thing, then I might have to just crumble.
It might be impossible to keep the Bug out of your album if it carries on that long. Like, if it just completely changes the world to the point where it's unrecognizable, it would be more effort, really, to just like study every single bar you'd written and make sure that there was absolutely no reference to the Bug at all. It's almost, again, the cure is worse than the disease.
It's true. But I mean, I still stand by my opinion. No one's allowed to write topical bars. I'll go through with a fine tooth comb and weed out any trace of the Bug in any tune I ever write, just to make sure that doesn't happen. It's a commitment.
So tell us about how you're like trying to do your stuff even with all this happening.
Well, in actual fact, this whole situation has made it incredibly easy for me to do what I actually want to do on a normal day-to-day basis. There's no distractions. There's no one begging me, inviting me to places. I don't have a big sack of drugs. I don't have access to 24-hour tequila. And pretty much all I can do is just sit and write bars and stories and things. And so, I mean, I'm getting to the point now where I feel like I have kind of said everything I've got to say for now. I'm just kind of like forcing it out at this point. I could quite do with a little bit of a change of scene, but for these last 2 months, it has kind of like handed me a little open goal situation. So it's working for me, I have to say.
So you're one of the winners of the Bug.
I am, yeah. I'm one of the Bug's success stories. One of his golden children.
Are you going to have a particular release that just deals with the material from this time and place?
It looks like it. I hope so. You know, I can't record any of it. That's the annoying thing. So it's hard to tell. It's all just completely shit. It's hard to tell. Potentially, I could come back with a book and an album. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do.
So are you saying that kind of, you know, like that'll do for now? That, I mean, you know, you might as well sort of leave San Cristobal, and then where next?
The thing is, right, they've shut down massive, vast, wide open spaces. Like, there's a really hench canyon near here, about an hour away, that I will want to see. It's huge, like huge national parks and areas where, if you wanted to, it's possible to be like 2 kilometers apart from people. But they've shut them. So it seems quite counterintuitive to me. I mean, do you know why they would do that?
Yeah, but at the beginning of this, the police in Britain were like using drones to bollock people who were going for walks in the Lake District.
Could they speak through the power of the drone? Do the drones have little megaphones on?
I don't know whether they spoke. They just basically made some shitty video.
And you know about the robot dog in Singapore that tells you to stay like away from people?
No,
it literally, it's like
no
a Boston
way.
Dynamics dog, and it like comes up to you and just goes, "Please, can you keep telling me?" It's a good time to keep Singapore safe. Stay 2 meters apart. And I would.
All very
and also, you can't even kick it in the face, because if you kick it in the face, it will get back up again.
Bleak.
Like, the picture for rappers is going to be tricky. You know, how are you going to do shows? I mean, have you thought about this sort of thing?
Well, yeah, the shows thing is the most annoying aspect of the whole situation, because I imagine, even if there is relative freedom, I doubt they're going to let, like, 500 people get super sweaty and drunk in a room together for quite some time, probably until next year. I know some people are optimistically rescheduling their shows for like September, October, November. But I don't know. I think that's a little bit optimistic. I think at some point next year maybe. But there's a festival I'm booked for in September that's still defiantly screaming that it's still going ahead. But I don't know. That's the annoying thing. That's the thing that I miss most, is that I had a few of them get cancelled.
And give us a little insight into the vibes in the rap industry. I mean, it's like, surely so dependent on shows and travelling and things. It's like, have people got any good ideas? Have people...
Have you seen everyone doing those super weak, like, Instagram live shows and Instagram battles and stuff? I mean, if you've ever tried to listen to any tune on your phone in general, let alone through somebody else's speaker, going into their phone and then, like, worming its way through Instagram and coming out the other side, it's just so weak. But I don't know why people are doing it. But people are doing live shows on an Instagram live, which I just think is a little bit, it's just a bit silly, isn't it?
I've tried to pin you down a few times on that you will return. You're not going to say that you will return.
No, I'm coming back. No, July or August, situation permitting. But I don't know, things are kind of escalating here as they're de-escalating there, I think. So I'm just going to have to see. I'm really hoping that I can have finessed this situation so hard to the point where, you know, I have a joke holiday, things kind of shut down, I spend a couple months writing, then things all start up and I come home all crisp. But we'll see. That's the glorious situation I have in my head, but we'll see if it transpires.
All right. Well, like, massive pleasure, man. And I'm not going to say anything trite either, but good to actually see you, because, you know, we exchanged the odd text, but good to see that, you know, that wasn't like an algorithm or something.
Yeah. I'm about.
Good to see.
I'm about. Nice.
Great friend of the show, Jake, a.k.a. Jam, rap legend, joining us from San Cristobal, Mexico.
Yeah.
No, really appreciate that.
Lovely.
Yeah, you have an enjoyable evening.
All right, yeah, you too. I'll speak to you soon.
Later.
Put it on and leave it on.
Some of the advances in surveillance technology have been questionable, but there's also been some quite good ideas emerging from this era of the pandemic. And wasn't it quite low-key genius what we saw in New York parks about painting hula hoops on the ground so that everybody had their clearly delineated space? That's the sort of nudge unit type of idea that people can probably work with.
Yeah, are you allowed to shout to people in other circles, or is it like library rules?
I'm not sure.
What if there aren't any free circles? Do you have to like wait at the side for a circle to become available, and won't you catch the bug doing that?
Yeah, I guess they'd have to come with a very thought out means of allocating the circles, perhaps on the basis of wealth. So, you know, if you're willing to pay upwards of squillions per minute,
then you get the prime real estate.
Yeah, I suppose we might get some real sort of grotesque examples of rich Uncle Pennybagsism when you see, like, you know, hedge fund manager surrounded by five empty circles.
Like buying the top floor of the Shard and then buying like the five or six apartments below you so that you don't have to be anywhere near anyone.
Yeah, this will be new ostentatious displays of wealth through the medium of circles. You know, you'd have some guy that was like born into money and doesn't know the price of bread just saying, oh, you know, I need that circle for my things. Is that going to catch on here? I mean, could anything go wrong with what seems like a pretty good plan?
My concern is that it doesn't control the number of people who try to go to the park. And I mean, what, do they just kind of walk around, you know, a bit like a car park where, you know, you're sort of waiting for somebody to leave a space so that you can back into it?
And also, I suppose, they could foment bitterness and hatred, that if you felt that other guys were getting the circles at your expense, you might be radicalised.
How do you mean?
I mean, you'd be like, all these guys get in a circle, where's my damn circle? I'm gonna take action. I'm gonna blow myself up. Another thing that was adorable was the cuddle curtain created by Anthony Covin, or Covin, from Stratford-upon-Avon, in which he's dreamed of hugging his grandmother. You know, long into the night, he's watched her dancing across his sleeping visions. And, you know, I don't want to obviously take the piss or stigmatise. It's a fucking adorable. And he created this sort of curtain through which both parties, there's holes where they can sort of feed their arms through and share a loving embrace.
So your arms are through the bottom one. Okay, my arms go through the top one.
That's wholesome in my book. I mean, you can't say that's not wholesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fully supported by Bug Radio. I saw someone else who'd done something similar so that she could hug her grandchildren. It kind of reminds me of the giant condoms used by Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley in The Naked Gun to the strains of Something Tells Me I'm Into Something Good.
I want you to know it. Practice safe sex.
So do I.
The thing is, I mean, you know, presumably it is quite difficult for grandparents to not be able to hug their grandchildren.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, as a non-grandparent, I feel that. But you alluded to what the problem is, really, that, you know, some smut fiends are going to lower the tone, aren't they? They're going to be like, well, if you can hug grandma with this, I can whoever with this.
But, I mean, I think that kind of thing is going to happen anyway, really. And you know, best of luck to them.
It's the thin end of the wedge. You know, so Anthony Covin in Stratford-upon-Avon wants a cuddle curtain with his grandmother. Terrific. And then, you know, some sort of Peter Stringfellow character is like, well, you can get a lap dance off Cheryl using this crepe paper.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be interested to see whether he does a good trade in it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's unfair for him to, you know, piggyback on something so wholesome. We don't know at Bug Radio where we stand on some of these complex debates, so we're going to beat a respectful retreat from that hot potato. As with In the Park, the problem being that you create something genius like a little hula hoop on the ground, and I do mean genius, and then the problem is that it's going to get oversubscribed and overpopular. Some executive called Dave had this genius. Well, I don't know if it's genius, but he had a...
So his name's Dave.
Dave Cicerelli. He's an executive in something or other. And so everyone's worried about how sports can restart and how stadiums don't really work as a point. I mean, some of us watched Borussia Dortmund defeat Schalke in the River Derby, and it was very strange that no one was about. And so this guy, Dave Cicerelli, is thrown into the mix. The idea that rather than having NBA, the National Basketball Association League in America, play in their usual housing with packed bleachers, as I believe they call them, instead just sort of take them to the streets, make them play in parks and like in sort of iconic urban locations so that there's not a stadium, no one can gather there, but they can still play, and then it sort of takes it back to the roots and connects with people. And
but the thing is, it doesn't connect with people. This is the thing. Normal street ball is still a no-go because people would gather round to watch it and the bug would fill its boots, or there's no one there, in which case you still have the same problem. And I mean, I've never played Premier League football before, but I would imagine that those people just live for the sound of the crowd, you know? Could there not be like a live, you know, like canned laughter in like cheap comedies 20 years ago? Could there not be like a live canned cheering artist who used like an MPC style soundboard to create like a stadium atmosphere, like on the fly, so the players could hear it all over the big tannoy, but then it would be wired through to the broadcast? And like, would they be allowed to use a boo sound as well sometimes? Could the coaches on the touchline complain about biased use of sound?
I think you're onto something there. I think 90 minutes of sustained booings at all major games from now on.
Because if they made a mistake and pressed the boo button when someone had just scored, I mean, the atmosphere would be destroyed. Like, it's, you know, it's a high pressure job, isn't it?
Yeah, and I suppose because like some of this sports stuff is unpopular because people feel like let's focus on, you know, important jobs. You know, if they were originally going to have soundscapes that were very positive, they could easily get hacked by Black Bloc anarchists or, you know, Seventh Day Trotskyists.
Well, they just like broadcast like sounds from porn films or something.
Yeah, or like the Russian national anthem on repeat, or, you know, great speeches by Mao Zedong, you know, and then you're up shit creek. There's this thing, the Global Grad Show, which is a competition between students and post-students around the world, and who've all been sort of conscripted in this competition to create designs that might be vaguely useful in our present situation. There's some quite interesting entrants. So, for instance, there's the solar tunnel. So people that are in houses that haven't got much light, they just sort of do a tunnel that refracts light along a kind of pipe and then just blasts a lot of sunshine into your gaff.
Yeah, yeah. The handle, a grip handle to avoid bare hand touching.
Yeah, so if we develop little claws that sort of come off our hands so we don't have to touch things, that's quite a good idea.
Yeah.
And the sanity is quite freaky. So it's a bracelet that everyone wears.
Yeah.
And so it allows you to shake hands with someone. But when you touch hands, a lot of sort of fluid is released. This is created by Northumbria University. Project Sanity is a bracelet that allows safer post-pandemic social interactions. The pressure of a handshake or touching a door handle releases a sanitizing solution. I think that would take a lot of getting used to. Everyone's wearing these bracelets and you shake hands with someone and then suddenly you're both smeared with paste, like sanitizing paste.
It's a bit like the kind of like buzzy, like the electric handshake or something.
I think it'd be better just not to shake hands if that's what the cost is.
Yeah, no, I'm inclined to agree about that. There's also like a sort of handshake glory hole thing where you both put your hand through. It's a cousin of the hugging suit that you both of you put your hands through these kind of glory holes that have clear plastic gloves so you can shake hands and, you know, still seal the deal. And then you can sort of carry on talking at a safe distance. Radio,
the best station. They're telling us there's a pandemic. It's a pack of lies to brainwash you and keep you in order until they get over.
So, Piers Corbyn, not the exact midpoint between Piers Morgan and Jeremy Corbyn, is getting arrested for claiming that the pandemic is fake. Well, I don't want to say that he was probably arrested for disorder of some kind, but what he's saying is that the pandemic is fake.
Pack of lies.
But also that it's caused by 5G and Bill Gates.
Yeah.
And he was getting a lot of support. He got a lot of support from former BNP boss Nick Griffin, a lot of YouTubers. I mean, obviously, that is a view that has some traction.
I mean, it was just a miracle that Jezza managed to keep... This is Jeremy Corbyn's brother, by the way, listeners, for people who don't know.
Yeah, we're not blowing the election because that's already happened. But, you know, everyone was trying to keep this quiet for a long time.
Yeah, so Jeremy Corbyn says that, you know, he meets his brother at Christmas, but they don't really have much to say to each other. And I always thought, like, it's a miracle that he managed to keep this guy out of the papers as much as he did. But then I thought maybe the reason the papers didn't go hard on him in the same way as they did with Meghan Markle's dad is because he makes Jezza look kind of sane by comparison.
It could be.
Which doesn't help them. According to The Guardian, for one thing, science doesn't do settled opinions, Piers Corbyn says. And for another, they're all wrong. So that's us told. And also, Piers Corbyn has a faith, even at 68, that if he states his beliefs often enough, though it may seem no one is listening, his day will surely come. And I guess maybe that was his day, you know, blaring through a loudhailer and getting bundled off by the police. I mean, I would just say it's a day that I personally could do without.
Could we say with a lot of confidence, you know, what his beliefs are? I mean, he's concerned his beliefs are being silenced and that they will win out eventually.
So his belief basically is that the temperature of the earth is caused by phenomena on the sun rather than by human activity on Earth. And pretty much for the last 4 or 5 years, as far as I can see, his Twitter account, every day there's just this kind of salvo of completely incomprehensible climate change denying infographics.
I tried watching a YouTube of him explaining his thoughts on electromagnetism, and he just put his phone in a little bag and then put it in some water and was like, you see, it's still listening. And then he like went a bit deeper in this sort of swamp thing, and he was like, now it can't hear me, now we're safe. But yeah, I mean, I like a lot of people in that part of the internet, their views I guess can be summarized by, you know, the triangle, you know, the triangle that represents these ideas of sort of supranational governments and unexplained phenomena and but yeah, somehow he's fallen in with Nick Griffin, so you know that
nice.
it somehow they've all sort of congealed around a certain perspective, which is skeptical of climate change and also
really anything vaguely sensical. And then from one Piers to another, Piers Morgan has been one of the really odd stories of this bug, hasn't he?
Yeah, a bit of context in that Piers Morgan is a shitbag and has spent like all of Donald Trump's presidency doing apologetics for him. You know, and similar on most sort of contemporary issues in the UK as well, just sort of anything to boost the brand. And I won't say we're above that kind of thing at Bug Radio, but in his case, it's very egregious. You know, that is the sort of guy that social media was made for, that will just sort of say and do anything to
get clicks,
to be talked about. Yeah, there. But something strange, as you say, has been transpiring lately in that a lot of hacks are letting us down, but not Piers Morgan.
Yeah, he's held the government to account with such fury over the last couple of months that it's now 22 days since any senior minister has been allowed on to Good Morning Britain to be grilled by Piers Morgan. And only on Wednesday morning, the BBC's Andrew Neil had an interview on Good Morning Britain with Piers Morgan. It's quite interesting because Andrew Neil is another person who was famously snubbed by Boris Johnson during the election campaign. He did interviews with the leaders of all the other major political parties in the run-up to the general election, but Boris Johnson swerved his. So they both had a little bitch fest.
The British record, I don't think you could argue, was great at all. Indeed, in terms of excess deaths, the number of deaths that have taken place since this virus broke out compared to a five-year average, we are among the worst, if not the worst.
The lobby hacks are generally tame and, you know, they appreciate the scraps that are thrown to them and the position it gives them and the prestige that comes with it.
Yeah.
And so they were happy to subject the government to zero scrutiny effectively as it was sort of cycling through absurd and devastating ideas like herd immunity and maybe just don't get a cruise ship for a while. But now that approach has been laid bare to the extent that we look like one of the most fucked up cases in the world.
Yeah.
Suddenly, any of the sort of lobby hackers, they generally see their job as holding the public to account. But now, they're in the strange position where the public can be like, well, you know, isn't it your role to examine some of these claims? And largely that hasn't been happening. But Piers Morgan has reliably been making them squirm and pointing out where they're talking bollocks and where their instructions don't make sense and where they've failed in those numerous areas of care homes and protective equipment. And latterly, I mean, at the top of the show, we were talking about people getting back to normal. Well, now it seems like the government's like, can we get back to deporting everyone? And they're talking about, you know, the families of care workers and things. And so, you know, we could use, you know, obviously beyond Bug Radio, some functional hacks. And there's not many at the moment. And Piers Morgan is one of them.
That's right. I mean, it could be that just maybe Piers Morgan and Andrew Neil have both gotten to a point in their careers where they've got enough kind of political capital where their paycheck is kind of safe no matter what, right? Whereas all of the, you know, the possibly more junior ones, you know, the people who are still trying to climb the greasy pole.
That does not excuse Peston, who is just too credulous.
That's right. But I mean, even he is starting to sort of...
To turn, yeah. Well, that's the point, because, you know, it's now got to the point where the most bellicose defenders, I mean, that's beginning to reflect poorly on them. And so if they
want... They've backed the wrong horse. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the facade is crumbling, the government is failing, the emperor's got no clothes, and finally, after everyone else, the people that are paid to cover this are noticing.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to call us pricks, you can do that on Twitter at BugRadio2020. And if 250 characters isn't sufficient for you to express your contempt, you can email us on BugRadio2020@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. Now wash your hands and piss off.